Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. And here we go once again. It's David Summers, and it's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Here comes the story of wrestling in America, as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller, in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. All right, and Ron, as we record this on Wednesday, September 11th, 2024, this is 23 years after a day, and I think it's okay to say definitely a day which will live in infamy. We all seem to remember where we were, what we were doing 23 years ago today. So what's your memory?
Oh, geez, man, I got a great one, I guess. I actually put my son on an airplane that morning he was flying from Knoxville back to Tampa.
Wow.
And he had to land. They landed his plane in Atlanta. And, he had a pretty dramatic day. I had to send one of my relatives to try to find him at the Atlanta airport. And you can imagine that airport was like, it's the busiest airport in the world. Hmm. And with all that going on, he was probably there 4 or 5 hours, standing out there, hopefully trying to spot the guy that was going to pick him up. So, what a horrible day for us all, man. Watching a little bit of it this morning, it's pretty hard. Pretty hard to deal with, even 23 years later.
Oh, absolutely. And it's amazing because we all remember that day, and we all have that visual of how thousands of airplanes were in the air on the morning of Tuesday, September 11th in 2001. And then one by one, they landed every one of those, obviously, with the exception of those three jets that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and in New York. Actually, it was four jets, I believe, and at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. So a day that we'll never forget, absolutely.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, I tell you, congratulations, Ron. Today, we begin your eighth year of doing these studcasts. That's incredible. This is the 365th episode. That's one episode per week, so that's a long time. And like I mentioned on the last studcast, we may be only halfway finished covering your 18-year wrestling career.
You know, it's hard to believe, man, that this is the 365th studcast. You know, it seems like only yesterday I was contemplating doing the first one, just thinking about it and talked to a few guys about it, and then I was eagerly waiting, obviously, to hear what the response was.
You know, the entire podcast world, and especially all those wrestling podcast fans out there, are now aware of your weekly studcast. There is no other wrestling podcast out there, anything like it. And obviously, fans worldwide absolutely love this podcast. It seems like you are covering more topics each week, and our rides through wrestling history just get better and better. All right. And speaking of that, where are we riding today, Stud?
Well, we're going to begin with a discussion of the Studcast itself. We're approaching the time back in 1980 when the first of the Southeastern Gulf Coast TV shows were actually found that, you know, that had been saved. And so we're going to talk about how I'm going to use these TV shoots here to enhance each one of the studcasts. Then we're going to return to the southeastern Knoxville territory, like we have been doing each week for a while now, and cover their very last card.
Okay, so, I mean, just a second, Stud. Do you mean that this was going to be the Georgia owner's last Knoxville card ever? What were they going to do with the territory that they had bought from you less than a year earlier? I mean, was something crazy going on?
Well, they, and I'm going to explain some of that before we move on to the next Southeastern Gulf Coast card. We're going to have that, obviously. We do that every show. And it's another very good card, man, I might add, a really excellent card. We're going to also then cover the TV show, the results of the matches, and the attendances for all three of the major markets. And then hopefully, Dave, we're going to have enough time for another learning tree question.
So it sounds like you're full of surprises for us today. So let's start with, what kind of changes do you have in mind for the studcast? Tell us about that.
Okay, well, first of all, I have to remind everybody that since the beginning of the studcast, each one of them have all been audio only. And to do them in video form is significantly more expensive. And in my case, I have never found someone with the necessary equipment that would be able to record for me on an every week basis. So I have recorded all these now 365 studcasts with five different co-hosts over the 7-year period that I've been doing them. So I think there's a remarkable power in simply the audio product only. Especially if you're listening to someone who's capable of telling the story in words that relay a different effect to each person. That can be done, obviously. And I think that's what's happening here with a lot of people that say they really enjoy it. And with the audio only, it's basically the storyteller painting the picture for each of the listeners.
You know, to me, that's a great way of explaining what you do. It makes your studcast unique and totally different from other podcasts. So what else do you have for us regarding your studcast?
Well, I have some great news today, Dave. For 7 years, I've been describing to the best of my ability with the TV shows, what the TV shows each week had on them from memory and from research that I do on all of them. And then, but coming in the near future for the first time ever, studcasts have basically caught up with history. We're finally nearing the time in 1980 when we actually have some of the original Southeastern Gulf Coast TV shows. In fact, the first of those TV shows is going to be used audio only with interviews only for the actual audio done 44 years ago, and for the first time, the TV show promoting Birmingham's first event ever, first Southeastern event, is going to be used in that program, in that show.
Okay, Stud, are you saying in the near future, the Studcast, where you've been describing TV interviews for years, will soon be the actual audio interviews with the real wrestlers? We'll hear it the way it sounded 44 years ago in 1980?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying, Dave. Studcast will have finally caught up with Southeastern's TV history. And it's going to make those old Southeastern TV shows literally fantastic. So today's Studcast is going to take place in the last week of August, 1980. And we are able to record every episode between now. If we can do every episode between now and the second week in November of this year on time, we will get to the first Studcast that will have these actual interviews in it from the wrestlers that will be inserted into that Studcast. That Studcast, which ought to be, and by the numbers that we go by, should be Studcast number 377. It should contain the actual interviews from 44 years earlier, and that will happen after all the Studcasts where we have the actual TV shows. It will continue. Once we get that first one, we're going to be able to do it in all of the Studcasts in the future.
Wow, that is great news, Ron. That's going to give a whole new light. These studcasts are going to have real audio from those decades ago. So soon, studcast fans are going to be able to hear the actual interviews wrestlers made 44 years ago. Quite the bombshell you've dropped on us to start this studcast. All right, so do you have any other surprises with the news you have about the Georgia owners of Southeastern Knoxville and their last Knoxville event?
Well, we'll see, Dave. We've got a packed ride ahead of us, as usual. It's getting bigger every week, it seems like. And we're going to be talking about the last wrestling event ever done by the Georgia owners of Southeastern. It took place on August the 28th, 1980, in the Knoxville Coliseum. And it was hard to believe, but almost 10 months after their purchase, they were done, man. And so was Southeastern Wrestling in the Tennessee Territory. Their card on that last Thursday night was not much different than all the others. It still had only 5 matches in a city that basically had become accustomed to having 6 matches, sometimes even 7s when I was still running it. The newspaper ad again showed only 4 matches, plus it said one other match. So the first of the 4 mentioned matches was a tag match with Terry Taylor and Steve Kern versus Stan Lane and Dennis Condrey. Now, all of those guys were young at that time, but they were all destined to become famous, all 4 of those guys. 2 of them, Stan Lane and Dennis Condrey, are going to be wrestling in Southeastern down in the Pensacola area in 1981. At that point, that'll be the only Southeastern territory left. Actually, after their last show here, that is the only Southeastern territory left in wrestling. So in a special challenge match on this last card they had, you had Kevin Sullen facing the great Mephisto. Wrestling 2 was back down to a single match against Assassin Number 1, like he had been weeks back. Now, the Assassin Number 2 was going to be handcuffed to Steve Kern, who was wrestling in the earlier tag match that I just mentioned. And then the main event was a lumberjack match with wrestlers surrounding the ring. And as usual, the same Abdullah the Butcher was again taking on the same maniac Mark Lewin. So I don't see any reason to talk much further about this card since it was the last one ever presented by the Georgia promoters. And it was basically the end of the Southeastern Tennessee territory. In fact, Dave, it was the last Southeastern wrestling event ever presented in Tennessee.
Oh, good deal. So to me, it's hard to believe that it was over so fast. So I have to ask, what about the attendance?
Well, it was under 1,500 people. It was the smallest crowd ever to see a wrestling event in that building. And hard to believe that only 3 years earlier, in April of 1977, Southeastern Wrestling set the all-time record crowd in that building for a sports event with the NWA World Championship, me against Harley Race. And that record still stands 47 years after that match.
So what do you think was the biggest mistake the Georgia promoters made in Tennessee?
Well, I think keeping the Southeastern name and continuing to do a live TV show in Knoxville end up being a mistake. They had a tremendous TV show in Atlanta. Gordon Solie was the commentator. It was on Ted Turner's WTBS station, the first ever satellite TV station in history. And that program and his show, because it was on satellite, was seen around the world. So I think they should have put that show on the Knoxville TV station from the very beginning. Never even used the name Southeastern because that company had been struggling. Southeastern didn't have a big name like it had before the war. Yeah. Since the war started, it had changed everything there. And I think they would have been better off if they had pushed their own product. They'd have been a very much more successful company.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised you come up with that. I never would have thought about it that way. That would have probably been a lot better. So what happened to the old Southeastern territory now that the Georgia promoters were gone?
Well, that's a great question, man. In 1980, I hadn't been keeping up with this wild situation up in Tennessee because I was so focused on my own territory, Southeastern Gulf Coast territory. And this story from here on is another fascinating one. With intrigue everywhere you looked, man, and deals being made that would affect wrestling in that beautiful part of the country forever. I think with all that's on our plate today, we're going to take that extremely interesting ride, but we're going to do that next studcast rather than this one.
I can't wait to hear that info next week. So how about you set us up with the card. Give us the card for Southeastern Gulf Coast last week in August of 1980. Take us back in time.
All right, so the opening match, man, says a lot about the quality of this card. Great card. Norville Austin in the very first match of the night is going to be taking on the very impressive newcomer Tom Stanton that had been there about 3 weeks. Charlie Cook was going to be going up against the 6'10", 430-pound Plowboy Frazier. And Plowboy is going to obviously be seconded by his little buddy Floyd. Third match, because of what happened in their match the week before, where they began to have a little shoot, actually, between them. As I watched the match, I realized, hey, these guys, they don't like each other. And so we brought that match back again as a special challenge match. That was going to be Ricky Gibson against Sweet Brown Sugar. And then the next match, we were still trying to find the opponent for the World Junior Heavyweight Champion, Les Thornton. And it was going to be the third and final week in a row after Tony Charles and champion Jerry Stubbs had fought out of the ring and both of them were counted out and we had no winner again. We had to get someone to sit in that spot to wrestle the World Junior Heavyweight Champion. So because the World Junior Heavyweight Champion was coming basically the following week, there had to be a winner for this next match. It was for the United States Junior Heavyweight title. It was a no DQ match. And the winner was going to be facing the great Les Thornton, man, who was a tremendous junior heavyweight champion. And it was going to be the final in the third week in a row after Tony Charles and champion Jerry Stubbs had fought out of the ring and both of them counted out with no winner. So the winner's going to face the champion and the loser of the match was going to be the referee for that world title match.
Whoa. Okay, that's an unusual stipulation. The loser of the match referees the title match?
Yes. You know, and as usual, man, we were all always doing things that few others ever thought of. I don't know that anybody had ever done this before. And two tag matches then rounded out this card. The first was Rob and I against the Mongolian Stomper and the Big C. This was going to be an I Quit match. It was going to have all four of the men in the ring at the same time. And someone was going to have to say they quit over the arena sound system in the building. You know, pretty embarrassing. It was a difficult match to not make a fool of yourself, basically. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and if they did not say they quit, if they got knocked out, it would be the only way they wouldn't have to say they quit.
Yeah.
But they would lose the match either way. So in the last match, this was the Southeastern Tag Belts on the line again for the third week in a row. This time, team of Bob Armstrong and Joe LeDuc were in one of those last shot title matches where if you win it, you either win it or you forget it, basically, about getting the championship. So Ron Bass and Randy Rose, obviously, were the champions. They were managed by the Big C.
That's another tremendous card, no doubt. Two title matches. One with the winner getting a shot at the World Junior Champion, and the other with two wrestlers in a last shot at the belts match. Plus all four men in the ring. I Quit tag match. All right, Stud, can we start the TV show that promoted? Let's start with the TV show that promoted this great card.
Okay. So Rob and I were at the set with Charlie from the very first start of the show We were the first thing people saw when the show opened up was the end of the first ever Southern Street Fight that we had had the week before against the Stomper and Big C. And so it was, right there was it was a pretty good different opening than anybody had ever seen for a lot of different reasons. But there we were when the show opened up. Rob and I were in cowboy boots. We had our fist taped. We had shirts on that were partially torn off. We were both bleeding. And I had a steel chair, and Rob had a garbage can. We were fighting the Stomper and Big C back through the crowd to their dressing room. So Charlie had not seen the video. And the first words out of his mouth was, "So that's what a Southern street fight looks like?" So fans in all three major arenas had seen something similar that week. It was a great, good introduction to a new type of match that was going to become very popular in our territory after that. So when the video opened, Charlie announced, that it wasn't the end of our feud with the team when it was over. And then he announced that we were coming back next week. Was going to be us in an I Quit match with all four of us, same guys in the ring at the same time. Then he asked if we would like to stay with him at the set and watch the first TV match, because he said it's going to be a tag match with all four men in the ring on television.
All right, so who was going to be in that tag match?
Well, there's the guys that were going to be going up against us, the Mongolian Stomper and Big C, and and we were definitely up for that. Heck yeah, we'll stay and watch that. So Stomper and the Big C, they used that match, man, to make a point about this upcoming I Quit Rules match with all four men in the ring at the same time. They wouldn't stop punishing these two guys that they had in the ring until they were both screaming. I mean, I quit. They had them. It wasn't an I quit match. It was supposed to be just a regular tag.
Right.
But they made it an I quit tag match themselves.
Oh, God.
And they had both of these two guys that they were wrestling. They were screaming so loud, I think you could have heard them in downtown Dothan, man, miles away.
Yeah, and from the TV station you're talking about 9 or 10 miles away. Another unique and great opening to a TV show. And I'll tell you what, let's get set up with the next TV match. So lay that out for us.
Okay, Plowboy and Floyd, joined by Charlie at the set. They watched Plowboy's next opponent, who was going to be former Pittsburgh Steeler linebacker Charlie Cook. And Plowboy barely had time to get settled in before Charlie Cook ended the match, man. He hit his opponent with a tremendous flying football tackle. I'd never seen anything like it, man. It sent the guy flying backwards through the ropes. He hit on his back. He slid across the studio floor, and he crashed into the desk where Charlie Platt and Plowboy were sitting. And so Charlie had to go up, get out of the ring and go get him, because hey, this guy wasn't going to get up. And So he went over and grabbed him, and he got ready to take him back in the ring, but he had to get him back to the ring before he was going to get a pin on him. So Charlie then started picking him up by the set there where Charlie and Plowboy were, and Charlie Cook leaned over the desk, and he told Plowboy, you could hear it on the microphone, he says, "You need to get ready for one of these tackles next week. I'm going to bust your gut."
So what did Plowboy have to say about that?
Well, he turned to Floyd. You could hear him say, "We need to get out of here right now."
All right. So let's go to the personality profile, stud. Who was in that?
Well, it had been both, it had been with both Jerry Stubbs and Tony Charles for the last 2 weeks, the profile. And Stubbs hit the last week. Stubbs hit at the end of the profile Tony Charles with the U.S. Championship belt in the back of the head and put the boots to him on the end of that profile. So this time it was just Tony by himself at the set with Charlie. And he started the profile watching a very violent end to a match a few days earlier to see who was going to be meeting the World Junior Heavyweight Champion between him and Jerry Stubbs. So both Stubbs and Charles, they were disqualified, and there was still no opponent for the World Junior Heavyweight Champion. It developed a big problem here. So when the video ended, Charlie Platt prepared to explain the situation to Tony, and he also had Stubbs in another studio so that, Stubbs could hear everything and see everything that was going on the set. And so Stubbs was waiting to hear the news exactly about what's going to happen here to find a new opponent for Thornton. And who was going to be defending his belt just 9 days later? He was going to be there. Thornton was going to be in the territory by then. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Charlie started to explain, the director and his cameraman, they got a really cool split screen shot. Had Tony on one side of the screen and Stubbs on the other side of the screen, even though they were in separate studios. And Charlie starts explaining what's going to take place. And he says, they're going to be meeting for the last time. Is going to be the last time that this was going to happen. It was going to be a no DQ match, and there absolutely had to be a winner for this match. So both Charles and Stubbs were all smiles at that point, until Charlie announced the last part of that stipulation, that the loser of the match was going to be the referee for the title match. Mm-hmm. And both of them exploded, man. They started screaming, wait a minute, whose idea was that, right? They were talking over each other and how can you take the loser of the match and make him a referee for the world title match? So Charlie knew this was coming. he was kind of like you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. He knew it was coming and he was prepared for it. And as soon as they got to screaming, he said, okay, let's close the profile. Boom. And that's the way it went out.
Yeah, when Charlie says it's over, it's over. So, all right, these profiles are really a lot of fun. Amazing. Over the last couple of months especially, this one was great. You guys were so far ahead of most of any territories, in my opinion. So I have to ask, who did decide to make the loser of the match the referee for the world title match? Just because to me, that means almost anything could happen. And that probably was the plan, right?
Oh, well, let's put it this way. It certainly does open the door for mayhem, don't it?
I think you like a little mayhem, Stud. All right, so take us to the next segment on the show.
Well, Sweet Brown Sugar, whose real name was Skip Young, he was in his first TV match in more than a month. We had so many great wrestlers, we couldn't get them on there very often. So before that match started, Ricky Gibson came to the set with Charlie to watch a video of his match, his recent match that he had with Sweet Brown Sugar. It was like a second match on the card, but I watched it, and wow, it was not just a good match, but there were some problems going on there. And I had not watched hardly any of their matches between Ricky and Skip in their first months of being in the territory. But I watched this one, and Gibson, the same match that Gibson was watching with Charlie. And the match had some extremely contentious moments, I guess is a good way of putting it. Some that the fans even recognized. They could tell that, wait a minute, something's going on here. And I kind of like these moments, right? I think that was good sometimes for that to happen. And it's kind of moments when fans reacted in a totally different way, and they could tell that it was something real about what's going on here. Hey, wait a minute, And so I had decided at that point, that I was going to marry these two guys. and then in booking terms, that means I was going to put them against each other for several weeks.
Gotcha. Okay.
I was going to ride this thing that was happening between the two of them.
Yeah.
So usually things would calm down a little when you did that. But those occasional serious moments were still there during their matches. So neither of them won that match. But I knew I was right when Ricky refused the opportunity given to him by Charlie to stay and watch Brown Sugar's match. So I knew right then, oh boy, there really is a problem here. So then Skip Young, after hearing what Ricky had to say about him, he took it out on his opponent, man. I mean, he was a good wrestler. Sweet Brown Sugar was a class act, man, and he could really wrestle. And so he tore into his guy because he had heard what Ricky had said. And the fans and I, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to enjoy the matches, man, between these two in the next month. I can tell you that.
All right. Take us to the last segment of the TV show. Set that up for us.
Well, a couple of the biggest and best baby faces in the sport were in this one, man. One that looked like a baby face and the other didn't look like anything like a baby face. And they headed straight for the fans on the bleachers, and you could quickly tell, man, they were bona fide stars. And I'm talking about Bob Armstrong and Joe LaDuke. As soon as they got to those bleachers, they were covered up by the fans, man. They loved them. The Big C, during the time that this is going on, he brought his Southeastern tag champions, Ron Bass and Randy Rose, with their championship belts, uninvited, to the set with Charlie, as Bob and Joe headed for the ring at that point. Big C started right away with how happy he was that after successful title defenses by his men against those two guys up there in the ring, he said, I'm so happy, Don Curtis. I made a request to Don Curtis. He approved it for a last shot match, title match, and this is going to be the last chance for Bob Armstrong and Joe LaDuke to win the belts. So, and then, you know, Big C, once he got started, you couldn't hardly get him stopped. And he just carried right on. And he said, he told everybody, if Armstrong and LaDuke don't win it this time, he said, they're going to be just like those Fuller punks. They're never going to get another title match, another championship match. It's going to be the same thing as happened to the Fullers. We're going to get rid of them as contentious opponents for us. Charlie had a good comeback, though, for Big C.
Oh, I bet he did. What was that comeback?
He says, you know, you were not invited out here. And he says, you are about as welcome as a heart attack. And speaking of your last shot match, he says, you being the loser manager that you've turned out to be, he goes, Bob and Joe only need one more match. So the three of them, man, stormed off the set. They got very upset with that one. Just about the same time as Armstrong put his guy to sleep, and Joe LaDuke, he grabbed one of those bear hugs, and he gave the old boy a rag doll that hadn't seen in a long time from Joe. He started just shaking him back and forth, and the guy's arms were just swinging around. Wow, I mean, they terrorized those two guys and destroyed them. So Charlie ended the show announcing that week that at the end of the show, this was a very good selling point here. Charlie was very sharp about this. Things like this. He announced that because the World Junior Heavyweight Champion Les Thornton was now fully recovered from his injury, that he had contacted Don Curtis and that he was going to come to Southeastern Wrestling 2 days before his first title match, specifically to wrestle live on the TV show next week.
Okay, so, I mean, that's a great way to end another rocking TV show. So how about the arenas? Let's go to the arenas for the following week.
Well, Norville Austin had a 20-minute time limit draw with this newcomer, Tom Stanton. Stanton turned out to be a lot better wrestler than we anticipated he was going to be. Ricky Gibson and Sweet Brown Sugar, wow, they had another barn burner of a match, man. And I mean, the fans really got into it. These guys didn't like each other, and it was becoming more obvious every time they wrestled. And it just left the fans wanting more, man. They wanted to see him again and again. Plowboy Frazier managed to get a win over Charlie Cook. Tony Charles regained his United States Junior Heavyweight Championship from Jerry Stubbs after 9 weeks. Stubbs had been champion 9 weeks in a row. The next week, Tony was going to be wrestling for the World Junior Heavyweight Championship against a fellow Englishman, Les Thornton, and Jerry Stubbs was going to be the special referee. And in the I Quit match, with all four men in the ring at the same time, the Mongolian Stomper and I, we both ended up bleeding. We kind of stayed locked up most of the entire match. Rob was with Big C most of the match. And then Stomper couldn't take it, and he started for the dressing room, and I followed him. Referee got knocked down in the ring. Plowboy Frazier, of all people at this point, decides he's going to come and help Big C, going to rescue Big C. And referee was down, couldn't see it. Plowboy got Rob and a full Nelson, and Big C loaded his glove. He knocked Rob out cold. And that's how they won the match. Rob never did say I quit because he couldn't say I quit. He wasn't even conscious. So then the last shot Southeastern Tag Championship match, that one was won by Bob Armstrong and Joe LeDuc. Finally won the championship.
Wow. Yeah.
Joe wasn't finished at the end of this match. After the match was over, he took his lumberjack belt off. He had it around his he had a very unusual pair of jeans that he wore. Mm-hmm. It went down to his knees, and he took that big old lumberjack belt off, and he chased Ron Bass all the way back to the dressing room with him. So it wasn't enough to win the championship. He had to get him some more.
Man, I want to tell you, it's what seems like an invincible tag team, Bob Armstrong and Joe LeDuc. Absolutely, I think, invincible. And Joe LeDuc looked the part. I mean, just 100%. He looked the part. If you looked at him, you immediately thought, that dude is a lumberjack. So, wow, that is a great night. What a great night. That had to be, all the fans had to be really digging this. So what about the attendances? How did you do at the box office in these three major cities?
Well, Montgomery was actually up about 100 fans. It got back to 5,000. Dothan was the same as the week before. It was 5,200 in Dothan. The week before was 5,200 again. And Mobile obviously had another sellout, 5,600. And we turned more. We keep turning more people away than usual, than the week before. So, our building, I wish we could have been in the main arena a whole lot more.
All right, this has been a great Studcast, and it ain't over yet, y'all. All right, we do have time for a learning tree question again today. And to me, that's one of the, I hear folks say, that's one of their favorite parts of the show. This learning tree question comes from a very nice lady named Antillery. She lives in Montgomery, Alabama. She asked, were you ever bullied in school? If so, was it elementary or high school? Did you do anything in retaliation? And if so, were you punished?
Oh, boy.
First of all, how big were you? How tall were you in high school, for example?
Oh, well, you know, I didn't get tall basically until I was about a sophomore in high school. And I grew to about 6'3 by the time I was a sophomore. When I was a junior, I went to 6'6.
Wow.
Senior, I went to about 6'8. And then my first year in college to 6'9.
I can't see how anybody would mess with you at all, even at 6'3. Yeah.
But you know what she says here in elementary, she takes it back to as far back as elementary. Now,
right.
in grade school and in the elementary years from first to sixth grade, I was no bigger than anybody else in my classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have any height, didn't have anything that made me look any different than everybody else. So, what great questions these are, Miss Terry. I mean, this is pretty cool, you know, and I don't think I've ever had a lady asked about this kind of subject, and I don't think I've ever even talked about this type of subject before. And as a matter of fact, I did have some problems, and there was a period that I was bullied, and I think it was in the third grade by a couple of boys that were in the sixth grade. They were obviously 3 years older than I was, and then much bigger than I was. Like I said, I was just average size back in the third grade up to about my sophomore year in high school. So my problem all started because these guys found out that my father was a wrestler named Buddy Fuller. And my brother and I, we had avoided this problem up to this point because we actually went to school, used our real names, Welch, and, you know, Ronald Welch and Robert Welch. And rarely, I mean, it was real, I don't know how they found this out, but it was rarely that anybody ever made a connection between my dad's last name of Fuller and our name of Welch.
Right.
So we lived in outside the little town of Loxley, Alabama, in the panhandle of Florida, right basically on the Alabama and the Florida border. And I was in elementary school. I was in the third grade. And so these same group of boys, and there was about four or five of them that, you know, the kids would go out on the playground. They would, and it was one of those schools that's back in the time when all the classes would take recess at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so you would have a group of, it was a mixture of students, and they could go and play, get with this group, bigger kids with smaller kids. And so it was a situation, you know, where we had recess with the sixth graders, and I was in the third grade. And so one of them, you know, pushed for a fight, man, every day. You know, every day for a little while, he kept wanting to get me involved in wrestling with him. And then he finally started saying that my dad was a phony and that wrestling wasn't real. And I thought it was going to stop, you know. I thought eventually, you know, well, I'm not going to wrestle him, you know, because I, at that point, I didn't know any wrestling. I mean, you know, what am I going to do? If, you know, so I thought it was going to stop, but I was wrong, man. It just kept getting worse. So I avoided any contact with him as long as possible until one day, he was the biggest of his little group of guys. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of forced me to wrestle him. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get out of it. And when he did, he got a headlock on me. And when I finally got out of it, the headlock, he hit me in the nose, and he busted my nose.
Wow.
So I was bleeding a little bit, and, you know, and when I went home that day for the first time ever, I talked to my dad about what had happened, you know. Told him, hey, I've been having a problem here, and, you know, what I do about this? And, you know, and he understood, because he was the son of a wrestler, too. And he said, yeah, I dealt with that out the kid. You know, your friends find out that your daddy's a wrestler and they think you're supposed to be tough, too, and whatever, you know. And he says, I'm going to help you, boy. He says, so that day he showed me my very first wrestling move. He had never, ever shown me or Rob anything that had to do with the sport.
Wow.
So, but because I've gotten my nose busted and I've been through this little experience here, mm-hmm. you know, he said, mm-hmm. I'm going to show you what to do here. And he knew that, you know, all kids basically, and, you know, grammar school, and the first thing they do when they get into a wrestling match or even fights is they got to get control of you, and they want to get a headlock, either a headlock or a front face lock.
Mm-hmm.
They squeeze your head real hard and, you know, hold it up against one side or the other of their body. And, you know, they try to make you give just by squeezing your head hard enough.
So, right.
So he says to me, he goes, he said, stick your head out. And, you know, and then he stuck his head out, basically just to show me what he meant by stick your head out, you mm-hmm. know, because when you get started wrestling somebody, especially as kids, you know, you want to try to get their head. And when you got their head, you got a chance to get them on the ground, and you got a chance to do whatever at that point. So, you know, he stuck his head out and they let me see what he meant. So basically he meant give him your head, you know, just mm-hmm. let him have it. So he said, so he said to me, headlock me. And he said, once I headlocked him, he said, now here's what you do. And he says, and you won't have any more problems after this. So I got a headlock on him, and now, you know, I'm 9 years old in the third grade, and
right,
and he reached through and he ran his arm up between my legs and he picked me up and he said, you know, this is what you do. You run your hand in there and you get him out, and he says, you be sure and hold him tight, get him up off the ground where his feet don't touch the ground. And he said, all you do then is just fall straight back and drop him on his head.
All right. I hate to interrupt, but you got to be kidding. So that could really hurt somebody. So did you ever apply that to somebody?
Yeah, I sure did, Dave, the next day. When I went back and then I went to recess the next day, the same bully came along, right?
Right.
That was the day before. I guess he thought he was going to do it again. And, you know, so he came back for more. And so I did exactly what my father had taught me, you know. And after that day, that bully never messed with me again.
Wow. All right. So did you hurt him? And did you probably didn't have any more problems with him. Were you nervous, like, leading up to that situation?
Well, you know, I didn't really know that he was going to show up and he was going to want to do it again, you know. But I felt pretty secure that my dad had put me in the right direction here. So,
right.
Sure. You know, right. And it hurt him a little bit. Yeah, you know, it mostly knocked the breath out of him because he didn't hit on his head, he hit on his back.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and he started crying.
Oh, no.
So now I'm a 9-year-old has done made a 12-year-old cry.
The bully is crying.
Yeah, the bully started crying, and, you know, but he must have never said anything about it to any of the teachers because they never asked me about the incident.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So then there was one more time, same group of bullies, basically, and then. And another one of them, you know, he had decided that he wanted to wrestle me. But and then I felt a little more secure about it. You know, I figure he's going to do the same thing, get the headlock. But he didn't go for the headlock like his buddy did. He got me in a front face lock, which is, you know, he gets you down. He locks you from the front of your body. And then he pushes your head down with his chest, and so it puts him in a different position. It was nothing like a headlock. I couldn't do what I did to the kid with the headlock.
Yeah.
So I ended up having to give up, you know. So I went back to my dad for another lesson.
Yeah. So, right.
I said, you know, he says, okay, what did he do? And then he showed him, and he said, oh, it's a front face lock, you know. So I went back the next day looking for the new bully.
Mm-hmm.
This time I went and found him, and I challenged him, you know, after mm-hmm. Dad showed me what to do this time, right? So when we got started, I just stuck my head out there, right? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, and he had beat me a day or two before with a front face lock, you know. Well, he hooked it on it again, right? He's like, hey, well, I got him last time. I'll get him again, right? So I did what my dad taught, you know. I reached up and I wrapped my arm tightly, man, around the back of his head and neck, you know. And then I shot my other arm between his legs, and instead of picking him up, I went the opposite direction. And I dropped him straight down on the top of his head.
Whoa!
Dirt first, man. Head first into the dirt.
Right.
It was my first DDT.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's where you were headed.
First DDT at 9 years old.
Wow.
Somebody. You know, and that was the end of it. I never had another problem with that group of bullies ever again. They never, ever came around me at all. I don't want no part of it. So, well, I guess thanks, Miss Terry, you know, for your questions. And You know, and I did not get punished for this. I think you asked, but I retaliated, but I really never got punished for it. You know, and I think it was because the bullies were afraid to turn me in because they knew they had it coming.
You know, this is part of my childhood fantasy. Maybe all the kids were, after it happened, they were standing around doing the chant, DDT, DDT. Dude, I love these stories. That is so much fun. No wonder these studcasts are so popular. Thanks for taking us back in time right there. What an amazing life you lived, even as a 9-year-old. This is all the time we've got left for today, and what another great episode this has been. So set us up for next week, Stud. Where do we ride next week?
We're going to finish things, man. Some of the things that we began today, we're going to talk about a couple more new ideas that I have for Studcast in the future. I want to change up my Studcast a little bit because... we're in a time, we've had two territories to talk about. Now we've only got one, basically. So I want to do some things that I hadn't had time to do before. So we're also going to go back to Tennessee, this next one. We're going to find out exactly what happened with the Georgia territory owners and what's going to happen in Knoxville after these guys are gone. They're basically going to sell out. They've sold out. They're going to sell out in the month of October in 1980, in less than a year after they made the purchase. So we'll talk about that next week. And then we're going to ride back into the only southeastern territory in the world at this point, mm-hmm. because Knoxville is not southeastern anymore. The new company is going to be a totally different company. Hmm. And they're not going to take that southeastern name, the mistake that I think the Georgia people made. So we're going to ride back, southeastern, and we're going to we'll talk about we'll find out what happened with the arrival of the World Junior Heavyweight Champion, man. It's going to finally get here. Les Thatcher is in. Les Thornton is, injury is over, and we're going to get the remainder of a really next week, a really unusual card and a great card, one that's totally different than anything we had been doing at this point.
Wow.
So I'm going to set up the TV show and the results of the matches and attendance, and hopefully we'll have another good learning tree question.
Cool deal. That's how it goes on these studcasts. And hey, folks, you can get up with the Stud anytime. You want to ask a question, you want to just interact a few minutes with the Stud, you can do that on Facebook. Find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend. On Twitter or X, he's at Ron Fuller Welch. Follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com. This studcast is going to be there with every studcast ever done. And we're talking 365, including this one. The Stud Store is where you get 43 super studcasts, 4 different 8x10 photos of the Stud, his best-selling novel called Brutus, personally autographed to you. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind, on YouTube. When you go to YouTube, it comes up pretty quickly, Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old-school wrestling entertainment, 440 total videos, the last 143 studcasts, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic Stud stories with worldwide stars, Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More, fan question shows, superstars of the past, and so much more. That's YouTube Southeastern Rewind. It is the best deal in wrestling. All right, final comments. It's you, Stud.
Well, you know, as always, man, I want to thank everybody for their support out there. And if you enjoy, man, we got a lot of new fans. We just keep growing, and we have a lot of new people. And if you like what you hear, tell your friends and neighbors about us. And we really, really appreciate all these new people that we have. Please take care of yourselves and others. May God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/ D Summers 955. That's Summers with an O. And on Twitter, X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's Instagram.com/David Summers Productions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.